Can we get much higher?
So high.
Dell is here. Thanks to the beautiful, beautiful McCafe coffee. Our coffee partner, smooth barista-made coffee from McCafe, available 24/7. And of course, Del, you always like making your trips exciting. A lot of people want to support you.
Is that with the Scooty?
Scooty, the two-wheeled taxis. Hello to you.
Very good afternoon to you, Andy.
How was your weekend?
Oh, I had a great weekend.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
Up in Sydney good. On Friday night. Enjoyed that contest.
Contest.
Very good contest. Not a lot of nice, pretty passages of play, but we say what we know what we're going to get when you play against the Sydney Swans, and I didn't tip the Swans, Andy, but that's why you can't question them at times. It was just a Sydney performance. Mm. They out-hustled, they out-worked the Bombers. Bombers tried everything, and I've asked a few people what it looked like on TV, and they said a very dour game and difficult to watch. In person, it had a bit of spite about it. There was a lot of passion within it. You could feel, particularly from the Sydney side of the field, that they were trying to initiate the contest and the contact, and it was led by Luke Parker, who was absolutely superb with the ball in his hand. I think he had more value almost without it, that he was the one.
He was sort of back a bit.
Yeah, had a little bit of
sort of back a bit.
Had a little
bit
of 1970s, a bit of niggle. It just had a bit of niggle about it, which was a great thing to watch and enjoy the game. And obviously the last 5 seconds after the siren has been a huge conversation. But no, that was a great way to start the week, I thought. And then I was at the G on Saturday afternoon and saw a really fine game of football.
Did you think it was?
It was.
Yeah, good.
It was.
Yeah.
And now, which makes you ask the question, what the hell happened 7 days earlier when the Blues turned up at Etihad Stadium or Marvel, expecting a performance to happen against the Kangas, who just came out swinging. But they were really good, Andy. And I know this is a different conversation. I don't want to get into it just now about a brave loss and an honourable loss.
Yep.
But they were better.
They were better. There's no doubt about that. And Collingwood, Frank, the two teams at the top of the ladder, Frank, they're formed, didn't they?
Yep.
Geelong and Collingwood, I think, right now, if it was an 8-week season, we would look forward to the grand final on Saturday next week with unbelievable relish.
You know what I think who needs credit? And there's been a lot of questions asked about Brendan Bolton, but I like structurally what he did on the weekend. And one of his most significant moves was from the word go. He held a really strong forward six. So often what happens is the forward line, they have to roll up the ground, particularly the high half forwards. He might only have four in front of the football for a lot of the game. He held six. He didn't want the intercept markers of the Pies to be allowed to come off their player, help in the air or help at ground level. He made them all accountable. And I thought it was a great move from that point of view. What it also did for the Blues, it allowed them to put forward pressure on. Now, that ball had been like a yo-yo. It would go in and it was just bouncing straight back out in previous weeks. It was getting locked in.
Yeah.
The small forwards and even the tall forwards had the opportunity to go one-on-one against their opponent or as a group of six and actually lock it in there for periods of time, which hadn't been happening previously.
No,
that was a good move by Brendan Bolton to start with.
I think if you're a team down the bottom half of the ladder and you can compete for four quarters against, and you know, North Melbourne did the same thing yesterday against Geelong. It just, you've got the top two sides in the competition getting pushed right to the wire by the bottom two teams in the competition, according to the ladder at the moment. This is the AFL's vision. Any weekend, any given Saturday, any possible result. This is what they're after.
Yep.
And Del, you mentioned, you know, the game on Friday night and then the twilight game on Saturday. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I've got it that this is what the AFL's after. It doesn't, they're not, they'd love to have free flowing, high scoring, for more goals, more contests. That's what they're trying to do with the rules. We understand that. But they want games to go to the wire.
Yep.
They want games, and we're getting games, a couple, maybe even more than a couple, that are in the balance. Even the Port Adelaide-Adelaide game, Port Adelaide ran hard back it. They want games that are alive into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
They're more often than not, Sydney Essendon alive in the last quarter, Carlton Collingwood alive in the last quarter, Bulldogs Brisbane, marginally. Gold Coast Melbourne, tick. St Kilda came at West Coast in the last quarter, a chance. Port Adelaide, Adelaide, alive in the last quarter. North Rush at Geelong in the last quarter, alive. Hawthorn Giants, not so much. Fremantle Richmond, probably not. But this is what the AFL want. They want, and they're getting it. I reckon that with the spreading of talent, homogenising the competition, draft, salary cap, expansion, the whole thing, this is what they want.
Let me put one to you. The SMS has just come through exactly what I was about to ask you. 90% of games are boring, was that last SMS. Is there an issue that, yes, the contests are close? Let's go to the Gold Coast-Melbourne game. I think the score was 61-60.
Yep.
So not a great scoring game, not a beautiful free-flowing, high-scoring, everything that the AFL wants, but the contest is close. Is that half a tick? And is it still hard to watch the product, even though the scores are close in the last quarter.
Well, listen, we'll get to stop and go, Del Santo. I'd rather take four or five calls from people listening to that than me answer it. I've got a view, but I'd rather hear from the punters. 1-300-736-736. Does a close finish save
or cover up?
Or cover up? Yeah.
Yep.
And otherwise, dull, dour, pretty
unenthusiastic,
uneventful game of footy. You know, I wonder whether the tight finish or the fact that, you know, the team chasing the game because of the proximity on the scoreboard stays in the game. I wonder whether that's enough for people. It's a bit like basketball. Turn it on with 5 minutes to go and we'll see who wins.
Exactly.
You know, like that
go for
thing.
A 5 kilometre jog together and we'll play 5 minutes in the four. Scores are level. It's 95 apiece.
Come back at the 10-minute mark in the last quarter and we'll watch the last 20 minutes together, you know. I wonder whether that's what people have the view. My gut feel is that as time goes on, and this is with absolute due respect to the quality of football being dished up by teams like Geelong and Collingwood at the moment, I don't think the great teams of the modern era are necessarily going to be as great as the great teams of a bygone era.
Yeah. No, I think there's something in
that. Is that a fair call?
Yeah, I think there's something in that. There's to say that the competition is elite, I think, is a stretch. I think there's teams that are playing at a good level and they are clearly better than the others that are all in this next bunch of not being what the competition was as a whole a decade ago. The product as a whole, and I've said this in regards to the skill level, I think the skill level is
Since you and I have been doing stuff together on this radio station, that has been a constant of yours.
I think the skill level as a whole is diluting a beautiful product. We focus on pressure and all that comes with it, and I understand that the game evolves, but I think that brings down the standard and the frustration that you get. And that's often what a poor game is. Yeah. It's when there's turnovers and opportunities to kick goals that are missed, and it just sort of all comes together and you walk away going, yeah, we won, but it was just a game of
footy. Just a game of footy.
Just another game. I'm glad we got the 4 points, but it's hard to watch our boys run around today. So I think as a whole, the product isn't as elite as what it once was across the board.
Okay, we'll just take four or five calls on this. Are the games being saved, or is the wallpaper, cracks in the wall being papered over by tight finishes? Are they otherwise, you know, pretty dour, dull games of footy that we're watching at the moment, but we get seduced by these tight finishes?
I love the contest. Like, I just touched on the Friday night, and it wasn't a great game, and maybe it was fortunate that I was there live. It might have looked severely different on TV, which I've heard, but I enjoyed that for the contest.
And some people will, you know. Scotty's on the road. Welcome to the show. Scott, what's your view on this?
Yeah, g'day, Andy, Del. How are you?
Good, very good.
I've got a theory. I think the issue is that the 666 rule is a good rule, but the problem is it's not getting enforced because the guys are only kicking at 46%, so the ball's not going back to the middle enough, and then so you can still flood.
Yeah, very, very good point. And I think that's one thing when we get frustrated at these rule changes. It's difficult to enforce the rules when they don't get to play them out because they're not kicking as many goals as you would have liked to. I think the game last week, was it Port Adelaide in Adelaide? Was it the showdown?
Fremantle.
Sorry, I'm going back 2 weeks. Fremantle and Port from a couple of weeks ago. Difficult to watch because they never got to reset.
It's 14-12 at halftime in perfect conditions. Your old coach was sitting in the box laughing his head off, loved every minute of it. Well, he is the evil genius.
Without giving anything away, Ross Lyon used to say to us pre-game at Etihad Stadium, I don't care if the opposition kick five goals as long as we kick six. Yep. That was his whole theory.
Thanks, Scotty. Mix in Berwick. Fire away, mate.
There you going, guys. I'm a bit like everyone else. The low scoring is boring.
Yep.
You know, but like coaches say, as long as we kick 1 point more than them, I don't care. But if you take a game like the Tigers yesterday, they were two men down against on a good day, and they smashed it. Yep. And they played contact football, hard football, and it sort of flows in the face of what you're asking.
Yeah, completely agree. And with your team in particular, I'm not sure who you follow. Do you walk away from a game after win being satisfied that you've got the 4 points, even though the viewing of that game wasn't pretty?
I thought the Richmond game was okay. They went back to what they were doing best. They just hit the ball hard and just kept moving it forward till they scored.
Oh, Mick, not every game's the same, and I think you make a really good point. That game opened up after.
Yeah.
That game it went from one gear to another after half time, particularly in the last quarter. It just became ballistic, the Fremantle-Richmond game. And you're 100% right. The Tigers were terrific yesterday against the odds.
They reminded, even some of the individual players reminded us about why they have been premiership players.
Oh, yeah.
And why they are still really good. There was a few that were getting questioned about their, whether they warranted a position in that team.
A guy like Brandon Ellis, he was almost on the way out. Oh,
I thought he was.
I think we all did.
Well, the way that they sort of spoke about him and played him or didn't even play him, I completely agree. He was good yesterday.
Credit to him. Brent's in Geelong. Your view on the proposition put by Dale. Brent?
G'day, boys. I think the footy is boring to watch. The defensive pressure has really hurt the game, I think. I don't care if it's close or not. I said to my son, recently we went to a game and he said, oh, what did you think of the game today? And I said, it was good that we won, but I said, there wasn't many highlights. I really struggle to watch the game because I don't walk away going, that was amazing or that was amazing. It's like, oh, okay, we won, big deal. And yeah. I think it is really hurting the game. I actually agree for once with KB that I think we have to restrict the interchange to make it more open and really have some highlights back in the game.
Without,
blokes play on each other.
Yeah, without bringing down KB, and I don't actually, haven't heard his whole theory, but I know he's very passionate and thinks through these things a lot. But just by simply reducing the interchange, it means you're fatigued more, which means the skill level is going to be even worse than what it currently is. There's so many, the domino effect of, well, let's do this and we're going to get this result.
Yeah.
I'm not always sold that if we can simply do one thing, that the game's going to look better. I just don't believe in that.
Well, KB's view is that coaches will coach accordingly. They won't ask players to run 16, 17 Ks in a game because they physically won't be able to do it. So they say, instead of getting up and back and having this, you know, kind of rolling scrum, which isn't what we're talking about here, but you'll actually just hold. You're half or flank. You don't come up.
I'd love to see coaches doing that right now.
Oh, no, it'd be great.
There's players that can't run the required 13 to 15 kilometres. But what do we ask them to do anyway?
Go and do it.
Go and do it. If you can't do it, you know what you do? You play VFL. You don't get drafted.
You don't improve your tank.
That's exactly what's happening right now, but the coaches aren't prepared to.
Yep.
Unless you're dusty and you're seeing the goals better. Right. Which I love. I love it.
Rob's in Werribee. G'day, mate. What do you think about this one?
Hey, young guys. I think this is a two-parter for me because I watched Gold Coast and Melbourne, and I thought that was, even though it was a low-scoring game, it was still a bit exciting. Them kicking a point right at the end, the last 4 seconds of the game, that was amazing to me. It didn't matter whether it was high scoring or low scoring. I just thought because it was close, it made it a bit more exciting. The other side was watching Richmond and Frio. You have Richmond with 12 injured players going over, playing an away game, and just showing what the young guys can do. We don't need, you know, it's all-star lineup. We just need them to tackle, keep the pressure up, that kind of thing. So I thought both kind of sides of it was exciting for me.
Good on you, Rob. Thanks for your call, mate. Tim's in Footscray. Your view on this, Tim?
Oh, g'day, fellas. Look, I agree with pretty much all that's being said. And I think the game's been going there for a couple of years in this direction. And I'd say something against the backdrop of a commentary I heard earlier in the year when Geelong thrashed Melbourne down at Cardinia Park. And one of the, in the post-mortem, someone said, gee, if you told me Oliver was going to have 42 possessions and O'Bloggs was going to have 35, I think it was Brayshaw, I would have thought they were going to win. And the reality is, if you give me those numbers now, all that tells me is that they played the game. And we've got this absurd thing going on. We've got scoring as low as ever, and yet the stats are as high as ever. And we seem to be just wallowing in these stats and just getting excited about them. It's almost like watching a game of possession rather than a game of football. And a good point, the best, most complete performance I've seen this year was West Coast beating Collingwood early in the season. In that game, I think West Coast had only 330 possessions. Collingwood had close to 400. There's a bloke like Liam Ryan, and the way we just overplays the numbers, I saw that guy, didn't look at his numbers. He was one of the best players on the ground. You know, you give the ball to him, it's like arming the bloke with a sword. But I saw the rest of the game was blokes fighting backwards, given goes, going nowhere. They're running around armed with rubber mallets. You know, it's just,
that's a good
the
point,
way
Tim.
The game is going, it's just, it's a paradox where we're just ogling about the stats all the time. And they're based on these positions, the way the game is going is based on other sports. Like you look at soccer, it's a round ball. You look at the gladiatorial sports like gridiron, the two rugbies. When the ball hits the ground, it's pretty much the end of the play. So we've just got this possession mindset. I don't know whether it's groupthink, But more is definitely less, I think, with footy at the moment. Well, and Garrett, I just think we're not appreciating the guys who cut the game to ribbons, like Liam Ryan, Sid Stack. Like, he should be in line for the rising star. You look at his stats, he gets in the teens, the 20s, but have a look at the way the guy plays the game.
Tim, Gary Ablett yesterday had 16 and was as influential as any player on the ground. Yes, and we'll talk about him, obviously. I want to get your thoughts on. But you know, I think, Dell, I mean, you not that long ago out of the game, and there are some players who I think do measure.
Yes.
Oh, I've got my 30, tick. You know, I've had a day, you know.
Like, it used to be 24 was a huge day when I first started, even during the mid-2000s. Then probably Gary Ablett was the main one that made 30 the benchmark, and Dane Swan were doing it consistently. Now the number's 40.
Yeah.
And we don't even, you know, there's not a big write-up in the paper, which you notice anymore, about, wow, he's had 40, what a big day. It's, well, he's had 40.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because you can,
you
can do it.
Yeah, good.
And I'm not saying that it's not a great day. Please don't.
I know exactly what you mean.
But it's, you know, Tom Mitchell has 50, and then we can speak about 50.
Yeah.
Well, if you had 30, you know, God, it wasn't that long ago. If you had 30, you'd be straight down the pub letting the boys know I had 30 on the weekend. So, no, there is definitely something in it, and there's definitely something about players that not necessarily count their stats, but they're very quick to look up at the scoreboard just to see how they're tracking throughout the day.
I want your thoughts on Fife, Ablett, Rampy on the other side of the break. Stop and go, Del Santo, still to come. More of your calls, 1-300-736-736. Wayne's in Seaford, Dell, before we get to Stop and Go and a couple of other bits and pieces. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
G'day, Andy. G'day, Dell. I find the game unwatchable now. I'm 59. I think I saw the best of the footy in the 70s and 80s and a bit of the 90s, but probably from, I think, 2000 onwards when they started flooding and just massive interchange. Like, I'll go to the footy now for a social event, catch up with a few mates, and I watch the game. I'm sick of looking at 36 blokes in a third of the ground. And then when it gets down there, they'll get it to the wing, and then they'll kick it back down to the thing, and I go, switch, and I'm going, switch? What do you mean? They go to the other side of the ground.
Like, what do you mean?
It's just nothing worse than a double switch. And what I'm worried about is there's a generation now are used, the kids that are growing up, they're used to this crap that we're watching, and they're going to miss, you know, the beauty of blokes just getting the ball and just looking dead, you know, straight down the ground and going for a kick. It's just
Wayne, those people, if they'll send a text message through listening to you and they'll say, it was always better in the good old days, the old dinosaur, and that's all they'll say about people like us, Wayne. That's they don't know any. Well, it's disrespectful to say they don't know any better, Dell. But this is, as Wayne said, this is what they've grown up watching. And there is a, I'm not going to say there's a beauty in it, but there is a, there's a, something compelling, like you said before, there's something compelling about the contest.
Yep.
But it's not a beautiful expression of the game.
No, it's not, Andy.
And that's what, it, you know, that's but what you've mentioned earlier
without
today.
Doing,
we've mentioned
without
past.
Doing any numbers, and I felt this at different stages last year, rarely was there a poor game against when two good teams were playing each other, though. So once again, I'm going to go back to the competition as a whole. And I touched on this with Disposal, and I don't mean to harp on this, but I think there's players playing AFL that shouldn't be getting a game because their skill level is so poor. The fundamentals of our game, they can't execute, but they're really good at putting pressure on, Andy. But rarely has there been a poor game in the last, let's isolate to the last year and the first eight rounds this year, where two decent teams, two good teams have gone at each other and it hasn't been a good spectacle.
Yeah,
that the skill level hasn't been good, that the contest hasn't been elite, that the scoring hasn't been great, that it hasn't been a close finish. That doesn't happen. It's when there's a lot of poor teams and then they go up against the good teams. That dilutes the product.
It's a very interesting point, and it's one that I reckon we could get a round table going, get in some recruiters and some list managers and player development kind of people. Get them in here for a couple of hours one day and have a really good chat about that as a real big picture sort of symposium type thing, because you hear people lament that. People who are trying to find another player to put on an AFL list, you hear them lament it.
Yes.
You find it hard to believe sometimes. Nick Del Santo in the studio. I know we're talking about coffee a lot, and if you're starting to get the hankering for one, Brewster made that.
What?
A hankering.
What's a hankering?
Have you got a hankering for a coffee? Have you got a hankering
I've
for
never
something?
Heard a hankering.
I'm sure that's the right word, isn't it? You got a hankering for something? That means you need to... You're going to... you know, desire for it.
Oh, if you want one.
Yeah, pretty much. Gotcha. Hankering. I'm sure that's the right word. You got me second-guessing myself there. McCafe's got you covered. They're open 24-7. Righto, Stop and Go Del Sano coming up, but I want to put three things separate to that.
Yes.
Because I want you to stop on all of them and give me your opinion.
Yep.
Nat Fyfe.
Oh, I'm going to put it in the Ablett category of last week.
Really?
Now, let's go back to Monday last week about the Ablett conversation. And there was a really good, was it an SMS or a call that came through? And you agreed, you said, it's either he gets cleared and it's completely free to play, or he has to get a week. And we jokingly said, well, they'll go somewhere in between. It'll be a fine and they'll be able to tick it off that it's a fine. And he has been punished in some small way and he didn't get off scot-free. Ultimately, he gets the fine. I think it'll be the same for Nat Fyfe.
Do you really? Yep. Okay.
And I think the way that Lynch took the hit and did not flinch, to his credit, whether he knew it was there or not. And
he's a big boy, Tom Lynch.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the taller guys are a little bit slower than others, Andy, but maybe it was a glancing blow. It didn't impact him, obviously, and he gets up and goes on his way. I think he'll be fine.
In terms of that notion
here, it doesn't mean I agree with it, but I think to what we have seen, and particularly with some of the really good players, I think he gets off.
Hankering, a strong desire to have or do something.
I knew you were right. Bang. I would never question ever again.
I should never doubt myself.
Yes. What do you think?
I think he's in trouble.
I think he's in trouble too, but I don't see how they can penalise Fyfe and give him a week suspension, maybe a fine once again, and not give it to Ablett last week.
Well, they've created... Okay, Ablett.
Exactly the same as last week.
Your great mate Nick Revolt yesterday said the degrees of culpability were marginally higher this week than they were last week.
I thought this weekend had a little bit more time to prepare and know what was coming. And
correct.
He had to body. So what they often do is you don't want to create the overlap. So Sam Wright gives that handball and they would often like to run on. So your responsibility is that 1v2, you're the piggy in the middle, is to make body contact so they can't run on and overlap. That was a deliberate act to go back and make body contact.
So when you're playing piggy in the middle of training, how often do you raise a forearm and whack a teammate in the head?
Never.
Okay, what do you do to brace yourself?
I'd put my hands up and probably push him in the chest. Worst case scenario, be in the chin or the throat.
Okay.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm not disagreeing, Andy. And for those that are going to get angry, I'm not disagreeing that I don't think that is worth something. But how can you call that something after last week was called a fine?
Well, this is why I feel... listen, I'm going to be... I occasionally have issues with Chris O's findings. I think Chris O has a tough job because he's bound by the table.
I agree with you on that Chris O part. He's doing what he's asked to do in regards to scaling it against the template that he's been given.
And I think that occasionally, because of this practical thing that the CEO's brought up a bit this week, you know, in the wake of Dane Rampey, well, you know, we can just a little cut a corner there and find an edge there.
The
and
public see through that. People see through that.
Well, they probably do, and that's why there's an element of disenchantment with the game out there 100%.
You look at the SMSs that come through, you hear the calls that have happened all weekend. People are well aware about this feeling about what's going on.
Well, we wonder why the holding the ball, what used to be holding the ball, we feel like there's an agenda behind the way that's allowed to be, has allowed to be umpired. We want the ball to come out. We want constant movement. We want the game to flow. We don't want to have stoppages all the time. We don't want to have ball ups. If they're trying to get rid of it and they don't, well, just providing the ball's out.
Yes.
Don't have an agenda. Don't have an agenda with Dane Rampey.
Yes.
Well, don't worry about what might have been if we admitted error. Just call the rules.
Yes, I'm with you on that.
Bloke raises a forearm and whacks a bloke in the head. The head is going to be sacrosanct.
Yes.
Well, automatic, mate. If you raise a forearm.
I'm with you. I'm not arguing with you at all.
I'm getting all
fired. Have a sip of your McCafe coffee.
Too many coffees
I'm agreeing morning. With you. Right I just up. Can't understand how we're going to sit here on Monday now afternoon and have a different take on what I think is very similar to last week.
No,
and say, well, that deserves a week this week.
It's a fair call.
That's all I'm trying to say. I thought last week could have been a week. And then the week before that, it was a week for Cousins.
What?
How are we, I don't know. The public and us as, speaking about football 24/7, meant to give any insight or clarity to that when we don't know because we think it's inconsistent?
I don't know. Dane Rampey. It's
hilarious.
The CEO says it was was well handled from a practical
sense.
Don't
like that at all. I've been in games and we still hear it where there's a bit of niggle often at a centre square bounce. The defender will be niggling the forward elbowing him in the back, and you hear the umpire say, "You do that again, and I'm going to pay a free kick." And I remember as a player going, "Okay, so you're allowed to punch me twice in the back."
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Robert Copeland. And you're allowed to niggle and whack me in the back all day, and you're allowed to have 50 warnings. But then on the 51, yeah, that's enough.
Yeah.
It's like telling your children off. You're going to go to your room. You're going to, and okay, you've got to go to your room now. If that's the rule, and you're not allowed to punch people in the back, and you're not allowed to climb the post, that's the rule.
And if the umpire sees someone punch a bloke in the back or climb the post, you pay
don't,
a free kick.
You don't get a warning.
No.
If I tackle you and tackle you and land on your back, do I get a warning because it was a poor tackle and it's in the back? No. It's a free kick against. If I take you too high or I chop your arms, if you do that one more time, I'm going to have to pay a free kick for chopping the... No, it is chopping the arms. The please explain is going to be entertaining for mine with Dane Rampey.
What's he got to explain?
What the hell he was doing. Like, actually tell us at what point at the end of the game with David Myers having a kick from 55 that you thought, hang on a second, I'm going to climb this post. hang on. I'm climbing the post. I'm going to run and jump and I'm going to scale this post and see what happens. I'm going to try and touch it from up here. Explain that bit to me.
I don't know. I want to know, and I've asked Ashley Brown to do now whether Ash can come up with a solution, but what I want to know is what once the siren goes at the SCG on Friday night, and then sometime after the game, 2, 3, 4 minutes, someone in the truck goes, "Hey, Haim, got this vision of Dane Rampey we've just seen. Well, put it up, we'll have a look."
Yep.
Up goes the vision. Hello, Jimmy, what's this vision? Say that vision is, because I turned the game off, I don't know what the lag was between the end of the game and the discovery of the Dane Rampey vision. What is we have score review in footy.
So you reckon you want
time,
to go.
We're just going to go upstairs, score review. Is there any room, what was available to the authorities after the siren, if anything at all, to say, hang on, we got a problem here?
So you want to know how long it took them to recognise?
And is there any, once the siren's gone and time over, game
which
over,
it had, yep.
Is there anything the authorities can do to rectify the situation?
I was involved in a game down in Tasmania once. Siren Gate, that the score and the result got overturned, I think, on a Tuesday.
Yeah, so that was because there was no more score. So there was a kick after the siren.
Yes.
This one...
So we
need a kick after the siren.
You want Myers to go back and kick it from the top of the
goal
square.
We need a kick after the siren.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what I'm saying. Because, hey, Del, what if Essendon missed the 8-on percentage?
Yeah.
Hey, they're a real chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're a massive chance to miss the 8-on. They could be right in the cut and thrust at the end of the year.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something in it.
Do you know what I mean?
What, can I get one more for you?
You've either got a competition that's full of integrity or you haven't.
Why can't the AFL say we made a mistake? What is the risk of putting your hand up and say, you know what, we just stuffed that one up?
Oh, well, I've backed Essendon to win. I've had 5,000 on Essendon to win.
Is that the threat?
Well, I don't know.
That's a serious guy.
I'm being serious.
So what is the risk of saying, and with the umpiring decisions from the previous couple of weeks, you know, we just missed a few. The umpire saw it and...
No, but this is the one where the umpire said, Dane, get down.
But there's been examples in the past where they've justified every decision from the week before.
And they justified this one.
What is the risk of the AFL sitting over there and saying, you know what, we just made a mistake. The umpire saw it, he thought he'd warn him. Good on him for making that call at the time, but it was wrong. We have instructed our umpires to call it as they see it. He saw it, wrong decision. Sorry, Essendon. What is the risk of that? Because we're saying it anyway, aren't we?
I wonder how that's going to sit with.
Is it sitting much better right now?
No, it's not.
Exactly.
It's sitting unbelievably uncomfortably for a lot of people.
Speak about accountability and putting your hand up when you make a mistake. Isn't that exactly what it's about?
Nick Del Santo in the studio. Stop and go, Del Santo. Here we go.
Let's go.
Dyson Heppel smiling while putting his arm around David Myers straight after that kick on Friday night was a poor look.
Not a great look.
You got to say stop or go.
Stop.
Thank you.
I was there, saw it. I thought it was a great piece of captaincy to go over to a person that would have felt extremely responsible for not winning the game, who was capable of kicking that distance. Why he went to drop punt over a torpedo, I have no idea. And people say he's a thumping kick. He's played 2 hours of football, so the distance of your kick isn't as far. I thought the torp was the option, but I thought it was a great sign of leadership and empathy to someone that has missed a shot after the siren.
That
was my initial take. People are going to jump all over Dyson Heppel, and there's been cases of this over the last couple of years. Maybe they shouldn't have laughed as much as they did, but the notion and the idea that he's going to go over and support, I think he was first there to him, to put his arm around him and try and make him feel better and not as responsible as what he would have been feeling anyway. I thought it was a good sign, and I don't understand why people are trying to say that players don't care. It all comes down to, oh, they just laugh it off like it's not a big deal. It hurts supporters, and I can promise you I've been in this situation maybe 180 times. I don't know how many times I've lost. It doesn't feel nice. It's your life. It is what you're here to do. You put everything into football, and to say that you walk off after a game and you don't care, it's crazy.
Del, imagine saying, there are some players you might think he doesn't care enough, but imagine saying that about Dyson Heppel. I think Dyson Heppel plays.
And David Moyes, the way that he plays.
Come on.
Yep.
Brian Taylor is being disrespectful by announcing that he will not change the pronunciation of Fantasia.
I've actually really enjoyed this conversation.
Have you really?
Yeah. Let it go because it's been flogged. I'm finding it amusing that it's filling up so much airtime with the pronunciation.
So
just tell us how to say it and we'll say it for you.
You and I will, and everybody else will, but why won't Brian? I mean, why?
Brian's his own entity.
But Del, of all the things.
That's part of the fun about Brian, isn't it?
Of all the things you want to you want to put your flag in the ground and stand for, why is that the one?
Because you get to talk about it right now.
But okay, so round 13.
Yes.
Round 13 on a Friday night, if Fantasy is fit. Hawthorn play Essendon. It'll be on Channel 7.
Yes.
Brian Taylor calls Friday night footy in Melbourne with Bruce McAvaney. Now,
yes.
Bruce McAvaney on Friday night this week just gone, called him Fantasia.
Yeah, with Basil. Yep.
So there's a chance you're going to have one of the callers calling him Fantasia and the other one saying Fantasia.
Oh, they've got 23 players on that Friday night, do they, Andy?
Oh, that'll be awkward. following its loss to Sydney on Friday night, Kane Corns labelled Essendon an absolute tease of a footy club, a middle-of-the-road ordinary football team. Is Kane spot on? Kane is spot on. Stop or go?
Go.
Right.
You want to
Tim Kelly.
Yes.
Who we know wants to go back to Perth is worth 2 first-round picks.
Stop.
Go on.
Not worth 2 first-round picks. He's definitely worth something real juicy on the way back, no doubt, if he does get back to Perth at the end of this season. I think he is I don't know how much more money you can add to your current value.
5 times.
Well, probably from here, you can only go backwards. You know what I mean? Like, he's probably at the top echelon anyway. So anything from here is going backwards if he plays poor from here on in.
He's going to get somewhere between a 300% to 450% pay rise, this bloke.
Have you got the numbers on that?
Well,
why do you say that?
Because hasn't it been reported that he's on the second year of a not big contract at Geelong? Like,
so he's in his second year, so he's on...
Somewhere in the 200s.
Yeah, 200s.
Somewhere in the 200s.
Yeah, poor thing.
I know, it's still good money, but I'm saying to you, he's going to go from, say he's on...
2 to 8.
Yeah.
Probably rightly so.
Oh, no.
And it's a little bit different because he's a mature age as well, opposed to coming out of your first or second year as an 18-year-old. Is he worth 2 first-round picks? No. I'd give him a first and a second.
The Adelaide Crows are the competition sleeping giant.
Go.
Given their list profile, honourable losses are still acceptable for Carlton.
Stop.
Okay.
Definitely not. But I will go back to something that we have been saying, and I've been a big part of it. If you're a Carlton supporter or you work in the industry as we do, you need to measure Carlton on something other than just win-loss. And at the start of the year, it was going to be a tough year win-loss, no matter what, even if there was a couple more wins than previous years. But what we are seeing is progress. What we are seeing is better performances. Players will never speak about an honourable loss, ever, ever. But I think there is a stage, and the players will never get this said to them directly, particularly by the coaching staff, there might be a stage in 2 or 3 years' time where you actually can acknowledge the build and you can look back on it with, okay, we were taking steps. Now, ultimately, they need to get over the line in one of these games. And I worked that game. They had every opportunity in that last 5 minutes. They're up by 2 goals.
Yep.
And we're playing good, good football. But there was mistakes in that last 5 minutes that, one, the Pies didn't make, but the really good teams that are able to execute under the most intense pressure to just do what you need to do in that specific moment. And I respected the Swans, the Cats, and the Hawks for this. And I know they're mature, and when they were winning, they were really mature groups. But you could almost ask every single player across those 3 teams in pivotal moments, what do you do in this scenario? And they could tell you, but not only could they tell you, they could execute it and get it done for you.
Good point.
The Blues didn't do that in the last 5 minutes. They didn't do it any, and you get the result.
No,
they ultimately they lose by 18 points, one kick being after the siren. So they lose by 2, and then Hoskin Elite kicks the one after the siren. But I'm still optimistic because I wasn't expecting them to win all of these games. Now, they need to close out the game better. You can learn that, and that's part of the growing and building of individuals, but also as a group. It's poor. It's really disappointing that you just want to see them. And I said this to a few Carlton people in the rooms post-game working. You just love to be able to say to them, you give us this amount of effort and you get this reward. But at the moment, it's you give us this effort and you fall just short. You need something more tangible than that. They're not far off. I'm positive and optimistic about where this is going. But no, I don't speak about honourable losses.
The Giants can't handle the MCG.
Stop.
Go on.
I have no idea why.
It's a fact, right?
Yep.
The numbers tell the story.
So they've played there a total of 16 times. Yep. They've won twice. Mm. But since 2015, so I wanted to cut out their development years when they were growing. So since the start of 2015, they're 1-8.
It's not good.
So even when they're going well against different oppositions, they come to the MCG 1-8. And I thought, oh, maybe it's a travel, maybe it's Melbourne, something like that. You look at their record at Etihad Stadium as a total since their induction, 8 wins, 1 draw, 10 losses. So roughly just under 50-50. But since 2015, they're 7 wins, 1 draw, and 4 losses. So it's not about coming to Melbourne.
No.
It's not about the size of the ground necessarily. There is something about that particular ground. And the only way I can relate to it, Andy, is when you're out there, you need things to be automatic. And I'm a big one on depth perception, that where you are on the ground, you need to feel comfortable that you know exactly where you are. When you're, you know, going to centre wing, you want to turn around and know how far you've got to go, where your forwards are. They don't have that at the MCG.
Mm.
And not only was it a loss yesterday, it was a poor performance. And they've been playing some really good football. And I love them as much as anybody else. And I've said Jeremy Cameron last week was the best player in the competition. It just was a poor, poor performance. 40-odd inside 50s, just scrappy football. Never looked like they were really in the contest. They were always just hanging on and just weren't quite close enough to the Hawks at any stage to give them a real scare.
In that period that you're talking about, I think the teams that they've played are Hawthorn, Collingwood, Richmond and Melbourne. Mm. I think.
Yep.
There might be Essendon. It's not as if they're playing chumps.
No.
You know, when they come to the MCG, they're playing pretty good teams.
But isn't that the competition?
Oh, no, I agree. No, I'm not. I'm just.
Yeah.
There is a reason.
So you want them to play Carlton there more often?
No, I don't. No. Well, I'm just saying they've been running into pretty good opposition at that venue. But I agree.
But you can put up a better performance. That's why I referenced the actual game yesterday.
Of those losses since 2015, only two of them have been under 10 points. Mm. 42, 36, 45, 33. There's been some fairly heavy defeats in amongst them. So
I felt when we spoke about this game last week in the lead up, that playing at the MCG and putting in a great performance was more important than just the win. So you've got to go the opposite when they've lost there and perform the way that they did.
You can go if you like, because we're only going to have about 30 seconds at the end on the other side of the ad break. Thanks for coming
on. You're a 5-minute ad break.
I'm going to give you a break. You can go. You're a superstar. You've got a big thing you've got to go and do.
I'm billing for this last five, though.
Nick Del Santo.